reading the third part of the concluding chapters to Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani. This is chapter 31, Achieving Perfection. It's called. The Parikram finished as successfully as it had begun, and at the conclusion of the month of Kartik, the devotees left Vrindavan Dham and returned to the west. They were sad to leave Radha Madhava, Krishna Balaram, Mayapur, and Vrindavan, but they were also happy to be returning to their services and their preaching fields. Now, this is me as an aside. If you remember that Achyutananda had met a devotee in Vrindavan, had a discussion on the subject matter of spontaneous devotional service, and discussed that with his spiritual master. Back at the preaching center, Achyutananda served with renewed vigor and studied Chaitanya Charitamrita with the purpose of understanding both the reasons for Lord Chaitanya's mission, the external and the confidential. Pushta Krishna had told him, "Don't make the mistake of thinking that what is external is more important than what is internal or confidential. It's not that one is material and the other spiritual. There are two sides of the same coin. Therefore, preaching and tasting Vrajabhakti are inseparable." And Achyutananda was careful to follow that advice as he cultivated the process of remembrance. He fixed his mind attentively on the Gayatri mantras, and while chanting japa, recalled the pastimes he had heard in Vrindavan and the other holy places they had visited. He knew these to be the activities of spontaneous devotion and hoped that by doing them, his attraction to Krishna's pastimes would increase. Achyutananda felt safe hearing Krishna's pastimes through the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, but I also began to regularly read the Krishna book because Srila Prabhupada had encouraged it. And sometimes when he and Gaur Hari would meet or talk by phone, they would speak about Krishna's pastimes. By studying Srila Prabhupada's instructions on cultivating Vrajabhakti, it became clear to Achyutananda that his divine grace did not want neophyte devotees dabbling in it. Devotees free from most unwanted habits could cultivate it, provided their efforts did not conflict with their services and with ISKCON's preaching mission. Srila Prabhupada wanted devotees to subordinate their inner development, their tasting of Krishna consciousness, to the all-important mission of spreading the chanting of the holy names. But Achyutananda also found, through his research, that Srila Prabhupada supported cultivation of devotional service by qualified devotees. But he wanted them to follow the example of Lord Chaitanya and perform the external and confidential aspects of Krishna consciousness side by side, being careful to keep the confidential aspect really confidential. Prabhupada definitely did not want devotees to make confidential cultivation a visible sadhana, or worse yet, a public spectacle. Srila Prabhupada said that devotees could only engage in spontaneous devotion full-time when they had completed their service to Lord Chaitanya's mission. In their old age, such devotees could retire for Nirjan Bhajan, chant Hare Krishna, think of Krishna's pastimes, and quote-unquote, write books. As a preacher, Achyutananda saw the wisdom of Srila Prabhupada's approach to spontaneous devotion. He felt no overwhelming greed to cultivate Vrajabhakti even internally, yet he accepted that it was his goal in life. He would apply himself to remembrance of Krishna's pastimes bit by bit and learn more from his personal studies. He saw that some devotees feared even hearing about Krishna's pastimes. To Achyutananda, that seemed like some kind of paranoia. Others knew about Vairi Bhakti and Raga Bhakti, but were not drawn to spontaneous devotion. And still other devotees felt like he did. They applied certain aspects of spontaneous devotion to their overall regulative service. The only devotee he knew who displayed real greed for Braja Seva, who seemed irresistibly drawn to thoughts of Krishna's pastimes, was Gaura Hari. As for his spiritual master and Pushta Krishna, they were too grave, too senior for Achyutananda to evaluate. He could only know what they revealed to him. A few years after the Vrindavan Parikrama, Achyutananda visited Govinda Maharaj, who was resting at a farm community a day's drive away. His spiritual master was in poor health, and at 76 had curtailed his traveling significantly. Achyutananda was eager to have his holy association. When Achyutananda entered Govinda Maharaj's room, he was taken aback by his spiritual master's gaunt appearance. Old age and a lifetime of traveling had taken their toll. Govinda Maharaj spoke with a weak voice. It happens to everyone. Achyutananda bowed his head and collected himself. They spoke for many hours. Govinda Maharaj was relaxed, more informal, more open than the Chaitananda had ever seen him before. What was your conclusion? Asked his guru. For a moment, the Chaitananda was uncertain about what Govinda Maharaj meant. Then he understood that his Guru Maharaj was referring to their conversation in Vrindavan about spontaneous devotional service. Achyutananda explained his understanding of Srila Prabhupada's teachings and his approach to Raghunuga Bhakti. Thank you, replied his Guru. You have understood Srila Prabhupada and have made a wise decision. Continue forward, preach and chant purely. In time, everything will be revealed. Achyutananda then asked the question, I'm not overly concerned, still I'm curious. How will my eternal spiritual identity be revealed? Govinda Maharaj answered without hesitation, I'm waiting for the empowerment from Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya to reveal such things. If it does not come to me by the time you are ready to know your Siddhadeha, then the Holy Name or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will personally reveal it to you. Do not be in anxiety. Have faith in Srila Prabhupada's line. Then again he repeated his assurance. In time, everything will be revealed. And he added with a smile, Ma Shuchaha. The conversation that followed was sweet, intimate, and unprecedented, but it had an unsettling sense of finality. Achyutananda had the same uneasy feeling in their daily meetings that followed the evening Bhagavad Gita class. The last meeting before Achyutananda left was especially sweet. Govinda Maharaj spoke of Srila Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya's mission, and of Radha and Krishna. I always pray, Govinda Maharaj said, that Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya will bless me with service to Srimati Radharani. There was a pause, and then Govinda Maharaj continued. The best service to Krishna is service to Srimati Radharani, and the best service to her is to preach about Krishna. If a devotee's preaching pleases her, then she will accept that devotee. In that case, all desires are fulfilled. I tried my best to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission. You do the same. Achyutananda could not bring himself to ask why his spiritual master was speaking as if he were bidding farewell. When he finally offered his obeisances, Govinda Maharaj pulled him to his chest and embraced him. I am proud that I have disciples like you to offer at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. As Achyutananda was leaving, Govinda Maharaj waved to him, If you have questions, ask Pushta Krishna Prabhu. He is an advanced devotee. He does not speak everything he knows, but if you prompt him, he will guide you. Ma Shuchaha. That was the last instruction that Achyutananda was to receive from Govinda Maharaj. 2 months later, Achyutananda received news that his Guru Maharaj had passed away. For the first time in his Krishna conscious life, Achyutananda felt alone. He cried, chanted in his room, and reread the letters he had received from his spiritual master. A week later, he received Govinda Maharaj's copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita in the post. It was sent by his personal servant and was signed by Govinda Maharaj. To my beloved disciple, Achyutananda Das Brahmachari. In the years that followed, Achyutananda tried to fulfill his Gurudev's final instruction. He preached with great enthusiasm to induce pure devotion into the lives of conditioned souls. Many young men and women became full-time devotees, and even more became practitioners at home and supported the movement in different ways. Pushta Krishna, Achyutananda, and the president of the farm, with the guidance of the GBC, were a powerful team. They guided the yatra to unprecedented success. The city center was the hub of book distribution and preaching, the farm the focus of varnashram development and self-sufficiency. Ordinary people respected the Hare Krishnas as true spiritualists, and they also acknowledged Srila Prabhupada's spiritual solutions to the seeming irresolvable ills of materialistic society. All in all, it was a good time for ISKCON, and it was a good time for Achyutananda. Now, past his mid-40s, Achyutananda preached with compassion, with a desire to give Krishna to others. Gone were the days of his trying to impress or defeat opponents. Gone were the days of his trying to use superior knowledge to lord it over juniors. He emphasized with the plight of foolish materialists and the struggles of neophyte devotees. He wanted to help them, and those who came in contact with Achyutananda felt at ease. From the tone of his voice, the softness of his glance, the truth of his words, they instinctively understood that he was not out to exploit them. Achyutananda had become a true sadhu, a friend to all, devotees and conditioned souls alike. And though recognition as a saintly devotee brought the allurements of fame, distinction, and worship, Achyutananda did not succumb to these subtle impediments to spiritual life. He remained strict in his spiritual practices and pure at heart. He never forgot that he was the servant of others. Achyutananda's spiritual activities had given him great strength. He systematically studied Srila Prabhupada's books, and as he felt the need, with the permission of Pushta Krishna, he read translations of books by previous Gaudiya Acharyas. He read Chaitanya Charitamrita with great relish, and when he remembered the places of the Lord's pastimes, it was as if he were actually in Mayapur or Puri. He also read books about Krishna's pastimes and gradually became familiar with Krishna's companions and their mood of devotion. While he chanted japa or kirtan, the form of Lord Chaitanya or Lord Krishna often appeared in his mind, and sometimes when he was alone, he would chant into the late hours of the night, never satiated by the sweet sound of Krishna's names. Many senior devotees visited the yatra, but Achyutananda would talk confidentially with only those he knew well, Pushta Krishna, Gaurhari, and another elderly devotee. With Pushta Krishna, he would speak philosophy, and with Gaurhari about Krishna's pastimes. But inevitably, Achyutananda's talks turned to all-merciful Lord Chaitanya. Achyutananda had given up material enjoyment, and Krishna, true to his promise, had reciprocated by bestowing upon him a taste for pure devotional service. Achyutananda performed his duties as before, but actually lived by the taste he derived from preaching, chanting, and hearing. He could not get enough. Yet he was careful not to enter realms of sadhana that were over his head. He continued to chant japa with the devotees and to concentrate on hearing the sound of the holy names. At times before chanting, he would remember the occasional pastimes of Krishna, and while chanting, he would remember the meaning of the mantra and beg for eternal service. Yet he dared not think of what service that would be or what form he would have to render that service. Achyutananda had learned a short book published by Bhaktivinoda Thakur describing Lord Chaitanya's eightfold daily pastimes. Sometimes those pastimes would appear in his mind while chanting japa. Still, he would make no effort to invoke such remembrances. What did come of its own accord was an irrepressible joy from remembering Lord Chaitanya's and Lord Krishna's qualities. He cried when he considered Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kindness in giving the topmost treasure to the lowest of men. And as Achyutananda's absorption in Krishna's divine qualities increased, his reticence to think about Lord Vrindavan's pastimes melted away. One day, Gaurhari said to Achyutananda, "Lord Chaitanya's desire is that his followers think of Krishna's eternal pastimes. You are a mature Gaur Bhakta. You should also do what he wants." Achyutananda replied, "Sometimes I do, yet I feel shy to plunge into these things like you do." Gaurhari just laughed. Achyutananda continued, "I enjoy singing the songs of Narottam Das Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and I have read probably every book you have given me, but my heart tells me to wait. Maybe it is because I worship Gaur Nitai and you, Radha and Krishna." Srila Prabhupada wrote in Krishna book, "Press Gaurhari with a sweet smile, the devotees can read Krishna Bhavanamrita Mahakavya." "But he said it was for exalted devotees," replied Achyutananda, "not for me." Gaurhari chuckled and looked at a life-size picture of the Radha Krishna altar on his wall. "But don't you feel separation from them?" As usual, Gaurhari had pressed the button that opened the door to an unexplored chamber of Achyutananda's heart. That night, Achyutananda sat alone in a small downtown room and gazed at a painting of Radha and Krishna seated beneath Vrindavan's autumn moon. He chanted softly on his beads. The temple was quiet because everyone else was asleep. Yes, he had to admit that he had begun to feel strong separation from the divine couple. A verse by Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur hung beneath the picture. It read, "Service to Lord Chaitanya bestows service to Srimati Radharani." "Is this happening to me?" he murmured. Achyutananda looked at a picture of Lord Chaitanya embracing the leper Vasudev, whose deformed body was transforming to a spiritual one. Would this also happen to him? Achyutananda was a battleground of contradictory emotions. On one side, his heart yearned for Braj, for Radha and Krishna, and on the other, his mind constantly constrained him with reserved thoughts. quote, to imagine one's spiritual form in the conditioned state is a material desire, maya, unquote. But he was not imagining his spiritual form. He was simply hankering for the shelter of Radha's and Krishna's lotus feet, and thinking and hearing of their pastimes would mitigate the pain of separation. And the more his intelligence protested, the more his heart yearned for Braj. In the end, Achyutananda resolved to speak with Pushta Krishna Prabhu. That was Guru Maharaj's order. But during the morning program, before Achyutananda could speak to Pushta Krishna, he received a phone call from Shilavati. She was full of anxiety as she related conversations she had had with Gaurihari. On his last shopping trip to Vrindavan, my husband took initiation from a Radhakund Babaji. Achyutananda was shocked. He was speechless. Shilavati pleaded, please come and talk to him. He says that since the temple will kick him out anyway, he's going to India as soon as he can. Achyutananda gathered his wits enough to reassure her, and after he had hung up, he went straight to his room. How was this possible? Gaurihari was impulsive, but not crazy. He was Rasika, but he knew Gaudiya Siddhanta. He's too eager to know his Siddhadeha, remembered Achyutananda. He remembered the disciple of Srila Prabhupada who had asked for blessings to take initiation from another Radhakund Babaji. Srila Prabhupada had become curious and had cursed him, something he had never done before. I must save Gaurihari from this offense to Srila Prabhupada, to his own guru, and to ISKCON. Achyutananda packed some clothes, thought again, and then added some relevant books. Gaurihari was a stubborn person. If Achyutananda were to be successful in his mission, it would not be in a few hours. And he wanted scriptural ammunition to present to Gaurihari. This would not be an easy task. Achyutananda was right. It wasn't easy to convince Gaurihari that he had strayed from the path of pure devotion, much less convince him that his learned, realized Babaji Guru was not fully representing Lord Chaitanya's mission. You just don't know what you're talking about, argued Gaurihari. But Achyutananda did know what he was talking about. Without personally attacking Gaurihari or his newfound Babaji Guru, Achyutananda presented two objective and substantial arguments. The first was that the Babajis considered Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his followers, namely Srila Prabhupada, deviants from Lord Chaitanya's line. The second was that the Babaji practice of offering Siddha Pranali and Manjari Bhav to conditioned souls, a practice that at one time was suitable for advanced intermediate devotees, had proven itself to be prone to corruption and thus no longer available. The Achilles heel in Gaurihari's argument was his attachment to Srila Prabhupada. Everything else aside, Gaurihari, do you really think Srila Prabhupada is a deviant? Gaurihari would not reply. He stubbornly fingered his beads, but when pressed, he answered amidst a shower of tears. No, Srila Prabhupada could never deviate an inch from the truth. From that point on, Gaurihari's defenses crumbled. After 3 days of discussion, he conceded that he was a fool. He had made a grave mistake. I wanted to know my Manjari Swarup and got carried away. By Krishna's mercy, Gaurihari's illusion dispersed and he finally fell at his friend's feet crying, please help me. Please save me from my offenses to my Guru Maharaj and to Srila Prabhupada. I don't want any Swarup outside Srila Prabhupada's line. The only other devotee to know about Gaurihari's brush with the Babajis was the president of the farm. He spoke at great length to Gaurihari to ensure that his head pujari was really back to his old self, not just pretending. When he was convinced, he instructed Gaurihari to call his spiritual master in India and explain everything. He also told Gaurihari to write a letter to the Babaji repudiating his initiation and his connection with him. Just tell him you made a mistake. Everything you want is in ISKCON. Once you do that, he continued, I will tell our GBC what happened. There would be no need for anyone else to know. As far as making it up to Srila Prabhupada and Radha Krishna, he concluded, you will have to do that yourself. Achyutananda stayed on for an extra week with Gaurihari. Normally confident and happy-go-lucky, Gaurihari seemed insecure and despondent. As the gravity of his mistake and the errant psychology behind it sunk in, he felt an increasing burden of guilt. But a second call to Bhakti Prabhav Swami gave him hope for the future of his spiritual life. It would take time for Gaurihari to again sport his ready smile and twinkling eyes. But when they did return, they carried a kind of maturity and gravity they had lacked before. Some devotees said that he'd finally grown up. Others joked, well, at 50, it's about time. It took some years for Gaurhari to regain the level of taste and absorption he once had for remembering Krishna's pastimes or reading books about them. In the meantime, he had taken full shelter of his service to Radha and Krishna. But his spontaneous attachment could not be subdued forever. In time, he again began to remember Krishna's eightfold daily pastimes carefully. When he did, vivid scenes of Brajalila appeared in his mind, and he knew that such remembrance was only possible because merciful Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya had forgiven him. That brings us to the last portion of the reading, which I'll continue tomorrow. Hope everyone is all well and enjoying the story of Achyutananda Das, which is really a story about any devotee, Niskan. Hare Krishna.